Gotcha.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is Jasa Sagonige, a 7th grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evenings and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Folks, the scriptures say my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends, and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you. Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look. OCO, Ginalee, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
I want to welcome everybody here. Woo. I think we're ready to go. I was looking forward to today's presentation. I will let you know that this is not a prepared speech. This is the first time I've had an opportunity to talk to a group that would be interested in these particular stories. And that's mostly because you have Andre here, who incorporates Hiawatha, and she's brought that Eastern energy of the Iroquois here in this part of the country, but in a brand new and fascinating way that many of you have experienced already and have found to be a good thing, an enlightening experience here. But the story begins a long time ago, up in the Great Lakes area, up in the New York area, and up into Canada. And at that time, the people were warring. They were fighting. They were killing each other. The people's hearts were on the ground because they were always burying somebody that they loved, either a father, a brother, a child. And at that time, the Creator looked down, and he was trying to find a way that he could change what had happened because the people had forgotten the original instructions. And so at this time, the most famous of the people that participated in this healing of the people from that time is a gentleman called Daganoweda. Now, his name is considered sacred, and so it's not spoken by the Iroquois people. But only for the sake of this understanding that you would know who he is, we call him the Peacemaker. And through the Christian influence, the Peacemaker has been turned into a very Christ-like, Jesus-type figure. Another person that participated in this was a Mohawk chieftain named Hayawatha, Hiawatha, Antawan. He has four or five different spellings as each nation spells his name and pronounces it a different way. And this is the spirit that Andre works with. And the story about him is also well known. In many traditions, he's considered a cannibal. First off, he starts out as a Onondaga chieftain. But he and the chief, head chief of the Onondaga, don't get along because he's a sorcerer. So Hayawatha leaves that area and finds a home among the Mohawk, where he becomes a chief, and he marries a Mohawk chief's daughter. They have three beautiful children, and in the process of the wars and fighting with this sorcerer that's head of the Onondaga, he loses all of his family. This creates so much despair in his mind that he becomes a cannibal, and lives by himself out in the forest. And this is where the Peacemaker finds him and performs a healing on him to straighten his mind. And then he becomes a spokesperson for the Peacemaker. For the Peacemaker speaks with what they call a crooked tongue. But in that time, it meant a stutter. It was hard to understand him. And many of us interpret that the language that he spoke was unfamiliar to the people. And so Hayawatha became the spokesperson for the Peacemaker. And Hayawatha was eloquent. How he could tell the story of freedom and the story of peace. And he was just so filled with this that he served very well in that capacity of helping to teach the people the message that the Peacemaker was bringing forth. But in all the writings that I could find stateside, there was barely the mention of a third person. And this third person was a woman. And in the stories, they said, well, she had a camp out on the edge of the forest where all the warriors would come, and the warriors would stay at her lodge. And that was about all they would say about her. And I got really curious, who is this woman? You know, I mean, was she bigger and hairier than the guys? Or what was the deal here? Why was she there? Why was she alone? So in the stories, I discovered that the Wendake, that the Hurons up at Wendake, still had a lot of their story. And from there, they connected me into other clan mothers that helped me with the story and helped fill in many of the missing pieces. So the story of the Great Peace Woman is the one that I want to share with you today. Her story actually begins in the beginning of the creation time. And this time is a time when Sky Woman, who comes from a world that is above ours, is thrown out of Sky World. And as she falls toward our Earth at that time was nothing but water. And the water animals saw her falling, and they were fearful for her, for they were afraid that if she should fall into the water, that she would drown, and that would be bad for our Earth. So the big birds flew up, two swans flew up, and they caught her in her wings and let her sit on their backs as they flew around circling the Earth. But it wasn't very long before she got pretty heavy, and the birds realized they couldn't do this indefinitely. Pretty soon some other birds would come and relieve them. But the animals on the Earth held a council. At that time it was the water animals. The water animals got together and said, what can we do? How can we solve this problem? So they decided that they would get some of the soil that fell out of Sky World when Sky Woman fell out, and they would put it on the back of the great big snapping turtle. So animal after animal would try to go down and get some of the soil. But each time it was such a long ways down that the animal's lifeless body would come back up to the surface. And it got to where none of the animals wanted to try, because it was obvious it was a suicide trip. Till finally Mother Muskrat said, "I'll do it." So Mother Muskrat took her turn, and she swam, and she swam, and she swam, and she swam, till finally she got a little bit of soil on her paw, and then she came back up. But it was such a long ways up that her lifeless body now came to the surface. But the animals swam out to help her, and they discovered she'd gotten some soil. So they took the soil from her tiny little paw and put it on the back of a turtle. And there it began to grow. It grew, and it grew, and it grew. Finally, there was enough soil on the back of the turtle that they could set Sky Woman down on it. So now Sky Woman, wherever she walked, this earth began to grow some more. Wherever she moved, till finally she took the soil and she threw it to the four directions. And then the earth sprang up farther than what she could see. Now, Sky Woman was pregnant when she was thrown out of Sky World. And according to the story, that was why the chief threw her out, is because he did not understand that the child that she carried was created from his breath. And he thought, filled with jealousy and anxiety, that it was because she had been unfaithful to him. And so within 3 days, this child was born, and she named a little girl Fat Face Lynx, Jigon Sassy. And she grew very quickly. And her and her mother would go all over the earth, and they would plant some of the plants that had been in her burden basket when she'd been thrown out of Sky World. And so as they went around planting things, and naming some of the animals that they were beginning to see on the face of the earth, the mother and the daughter grew very, very close. They were the only ones each other had. They were each other's world. Till finally one day, the young woman had grown, and Sky Woman could see that she was getting at that age where she would want to marry. But you know what? Sky Woman didn't like any of these earth beings. None of them were good enough for her daughter. She wanted a sky being for her daughter. So she called her daughter to her and said, "Lynx, I want you to promise me that you will never marry without getting my permission first." Well, Lynx thought that was a strange request. Who was she going to marry? There was no other sky people here. But she agreed. "Yes, Mom, that's what I'll do." Well, North Wind had been watching this young girl as she grew, and he was so enamored with her, he wanted to marry her. He loved her. So he had a problem, though, because since he didn't know how to court a human being, he didn't really know how to present himself. So he decided he would go as a squirrel So he fills his cheek full of nuts, goes over to her, lays them at her feet, and says, Lynx, will you marry me? Well, now Lynx, she wants to be married. She wants children of her own. But this is a squirrel. I have to ask my mother first. So she runs and she asks Sky Woman, and of course Sky Woman says, no way, you're not going to marry this one. So she comes back with the news, no, I can't marry you. So now North Wind thinks, well, what else can I do? That didn't work. So this time he's going to be a fox. So he shapeshifts and now he's a fox. That big bushy tail with the white tip and the big pointy ears and the whiskers. Oh, he looks marvelous. He goes up to Lynx and he says, Lynx, will you marry me? And Lynx looks at him. Oh, beautiful red coat. He looks so sly and wise. I have to ask my mother first. So now she runs and she asks Sky Woman, and Sky Woman says, no way can this be. So she comes back and delivers the sad news. No, I can't marry you, Fox. My mother says so. So now North Wind goes away. What am I going to do? Finally, out of complete desperation, North Wind decides to go as himself. He dresses his long black hair, puts the feathers in, puts on his finest buckskin, puts on his paint. Now he goes to see Lynx. As he comes into the clearing where Lynx is, Lynx sees him. Lynx forgets all about asking Mother anything. She invites him home to her lodge. And in those times, he said that he would be back about dark. So he left, and he came back just about dark carrying certain items. And that night, he laid Lynx down, and on one side, he put an arrow that didn't have a flint on it. And on the other side, he put an arrow with a flint on it. And then at her head, he laid a lynx skin, only it was blue. And at her feet, he laid the precious Oneida rose, the Cherokee rose, the wild rose, as all the nations, even the Shoshone, claim it. So laid the wild rose there at her feet. And then in the morning, he gathered them up and he left. And the mother spoke to Lynx and said, now I see good things are going to happen for you, my daughter. And over the next few months, they watched as Lynx got bigger and bigger and bigger as she was with child.
How there was a cloud cover and then the sun came out and it was like almost exactly like we were out.
Telling me you were in the present?
Yeah.
We had that same experience.
This great law is the foundation of our Constitution, but it also created several other things that started up there in the New York area. One of them is the suffragette movement, and that is simply because under white man rule, women were owned by either their father or their husband. If they even got an inheritance, it belonged to their husband. It didn't belong to them. And it was like they were little more than chattel. Where right next door to these white women were these Indian women who not only voted, but they ran the tribal politics. And they discovered that the sky did not fall in on the Indian women because they were doing these things with their people. In fact, it's commonly known that white women that were taken captive by Indian people, one of the most famous is Mary Jamison, who was captive by the Iroquois. She never went back to the white life because she had more rights as a white slave in the Indian camp than she did as a white person being free. Mm. So this is what started this desire for suffragette movement. Now, our country was established in 1976, I believe, And
I'm
we...
Not, 18,
18, yeah.
1836. Oh, well, he's 1976, my God.
1836. But it was not until
1776.
Yeah,
you were saying...
No, she just said 19.
Oh, all right, 17. Well, 1776, okay. So, anyway, it wasn't until 1926 that they gave women the right to vote. And women have been struggling ever since then, trying to obtain rights that just belong to human beings. And in many parts of the world, it's far worse than it ever was here. But so the suffragette movement started there. The freedom movement was another one that started up there. The Iroquois men, when they would encounter a slave owner, oftentimes they would set that slave free. Or sometimes they would do role reversal. They would put the slave as the master, and the master would now be the slave. So this desire for freedom traveled quickly down through the South, so that when they started to follow the North Star to the North Star Trail, the Underground Railroad, they knew that if they could get as far as the Haudenosaunee, that they would find freedom. Mm. And that's what started the North Star Trail. Another problem that we have today that came because of the white man's view of women and how they treated them, the Iroquois men were also famous that if they found a man who was beating his wife, oftentimes they'd beat the man just like he was beating the wife. They were huge on doing this because they didn't believe in this type of interaction with children or with the woman. And the stories about Indians raping women, that is so far off because of the honored position women had within the tribal culture. There is not a single Indian man who would lay a hand on a woman in a sexual manner or an abusive manner, period. And especially in the matriarchal orders, because when he got married, he moved in with her family. Can you imagine? You'd have the mother and all of her sisters down on you if you tried to abuse her. Another thing that came out of the North Star, out of that area, is the suffragette movement, the North Star Trail, but also religions. Religions at that time were really big. I believe the Seventh Day, and there was a couple of other, but probably the biggest world-known one is the Mormon Church, the LDS Church. Joseph Smith grew up on a homestead just 15 miles away from the Great Peace Woman's Peace Lodge at Canandaigua. He grew up during a period of some chaos, but the Indians still had a great deal of freedom, and the Indians have always shared their culture because they've always thought that it is so beautiful and it's a good way for people to live. And so I am quite sure that he grew up in the middle of all that because it was all around him. The Indians, we didn't start putting them on reservations until like around 1830, and by that time Joseph Smith was 30 years old. So, and if you look at a lot of the things that he taught, such as the law of consecration, the law of consecration is essentially the way the Indian people lived. There was no money exchange. Whatever one had, it was given to everybody. The law of consecration, for those of you who don't know, is whenever a new convert came in, everything that he owned was converted or given to the church. And then it was passed back to members so that everybody would have enough to live on. This was done because so many of the converts that were coming in didn't have any wealth. So it was a way to take the wealth from the rich and share it so that everybody in the church would be taken care of. Joseph Smith said that the law of consecration was a celestial law, and the saints had to live it before they could gain entrance into the celestial kingdom. But I believe it was pretty shortly lived because those who had worked so hard to make a lot of money didn't like giving it to those that didn't have any. But among Indian people, it's always been a sharing. There has never been this idea of possession. You've got to be careful going into Indian villages and saying, boy, that's pretty, because they'll take it off and they'll give it to you. They're very sharing, loving, caring people. And I think Joseph Smith saw this, and he wanted to try to create this for the saints. And so religion is another thing that was fostered up here, up there in that particular part of the country. So all of this history that comes from the beginning of time down to our present day has just been time capsuled for you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anadaro is a wicked sorcerer, and he loves that power that he has. People are fearful of him. I mean, you talk about respect. They get out of his way when he shows up. But at the same time, you know, it's awfully lonely being in that position. Yeah, he's got his warriors that'll do anything he tells them to do. But you know what? He doesn't dare trust them. If he turns his back to them, they're just as likely to kill him as they will anybody that he sends them out for. So it becomes really lonely. And while the Onondaga are in this little stew pot here, over here they're hearing laughter coming from the villages. They're hearing laughter all around them. When the hunters go out, they take a peek and they see the people. There's laughter going on, and there's dances going on, and people are enjoying each other. And here are the Onondagas, you know. They're isolated, and they're still full of their anger and their hatred, but they're watching what peace does. Peace brings joy. It brings happiness. It brings prosperity. It brings all the things that war was supposed to bring and didn't. So little by little, it is now time to go to Onondaga and ask him to join the Great Peace. But you know, he has killed so many people. In our day and age, what would we do with someone like that? We would put them in prison for the rest of their lives or something. But when they bring this to council, Jikonsase says no. What we're going to do is we're going to offer him a deal that he can't refuse. We're going to make him head speaker of our entire confederacy. All decisions he will have the last word on. Whoa! Imagine. What does that mean? This is trust. This is definitely different. So Hiawatha is changed. Heinwentha is given the opportunity to go and give this message. And this is an important time for Heinwentha, because this is the man who's killed his family. This is the man that nearly destroyed him. Now he's got to go offer peace to him. So it means that Heinwentha has to get right with himself. He's got to get totally balanced. He's got to be totally in the peace. He has to be totally who he is in order to deliver this message. So now, Onondaga, the wicked sorcerer. You know, there's only two people that comes to visit him. Those that are so mad they're trying to kill him, or those that have been captured and are going to be his dinner. But here comes his old enemy, Heinwentha. And there's something weird about Heinwentha, because he's not fearful, and he's not angry. Look at him. He's walking lively, and he's singing a song, and there's happiness coming out of him. And Onondaga says, boy, maybe he really did lose his mind. But whatever it is, I think I want to know about it. So he invites Heinwentha in, and he sits. And Heinwentha begins the healing on Onondaga's mind. And he offers to Onondaga this place as head faith keeper of the entire confederacy. And in the end, a year later, Onondaga does accept. And now they bring him into the center of the longhouse. And as he walks in, at first he thinks he's been deceived, because here is gathered all of his enemies, as well as his own people. And in this instant, he realizes that he's all alone. This has been a trick. They're going to kill him. But instead, they had gotten a song of peace from the Jikon Sesay. And the peacemaker had taught this song to all of the people, so that when he is set in the center of the people, they circle him. And they begin to sing the song of peace. And there is such a pouring of forgiveness and love. Sit there in front of their eyes. They see Anadaro's spine straighten. They see him become straight and look like all other men. The Jikon Sesay steps forward. She combs his hair. Straightens out whatever snakes are still there. The Seneca war chief stands beside her with the horned Gustawan. And when she has made him ready, he hands to her the horned Gustawan, and she sets it upon his head. Now the peacemaker tells Anadaro, you are now the speaker for the people. It means you must never let anger take over your soul. Your words must always be very carefully given, for all the people are now your children, and you are to be there and counsel them and love them as your own child. And the peacemaker continues giving him this counsel of what a chief is to be. This confederacy, so far, they found a date. In the story, there's also, when the Senecas are converted, it's because of a sun blockout up there. Eclipse, thank you, a sun eclipse. And the sun eclipse helps the Senecas make up their mind to join the confederacy. But during this time, they have managed to date this about 909 AD so far. It was dated at 1145, but they have now found archaeological proof that takes it back to at least 909 AD. So this was long before the white man came. And this great law, this great peace, existed right up until the boat people landed and broke the sacred hoop. So that is well over 1500 years that these people lived in peace. Our anthropologists, our historians want us to believe that these people warred with each other. But it's not true. There was a peace protocol that existed clear across North America. They had trade routes that came from South America all the way to Alaska. There was ways to conduct peace where they traded songs, they traded information, they traded items that they made. Oh, by the way, that was one of the other things I was going to mention about Jikon Sesay. When she arrived at a village, she would arrive with her belongings. Now, among the Hurons, one of the things, because of the peace, they had time to do things. They had time to go out and gather the dyes and the materials that they needed to make baskets or to do fine weavings or to decorate their clothes. In fact, among the Hurons, everything, even their spoons, were carved and decorated. So when she showed up with all this beauty that she had brought that was a result of the people's handicraft, then those that were in their starving villages who never had time to do anything like that saw that they could create beauty also if they had peace. So the things that she brought that were beautiful also helped make that slide into peace. But anyway, the Confederacy lasted for almost 1,500 years. The Confederacy is still in force, with the Onondagas being the main speakers there at Lake Onondaga, just outside of it in New York. And this is the story of the great peace woman who the peacemaker gave another name to. He gave her the name Mother of Nations. And for three reasons. One, because she was the mother of all Ungwe Howe, all Haudenosaunee people. Second, because she mothered the people into the Great Peace. This Great Peace was the original draft of the Constitution of the United States of America. And so, in a way, she kind of mothered us into our peace as well. So, this is the story of the Great Peace Woman, and I don't know where Nikki went. I think it's time for another break.
Somebody's coming.
So thank you, you guys, for your attention.
Thank you.
Good break.
Any questions? Something I misstated or something I didn't make clear?
You were saying there were supposedly four children. One was, and you had, so when they made the bed, one was the arrow without the flint, one was the arrow with
yes.
the flint, one was the roses. Called Sweet Blossom,
yes,
and the other one was at the head called Jugotsa Way.
Ion. Blue Link.
Was at the head.
Link.
Oh, and Blue Link was at the head.
Blue Link was the other name.
And the Blue Link was at the head.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I didn't believe. It kind of became clear.
Blue Link took the north.
She was in the north.
And yeah, then
she was the constant.
Sapling is the east, and Sweet Blossom is the south, and then Flint or Towiskaroo is the west.
Flint is the west.
Yes.
And the sapling was the one without the.
Was in the east.
Oh, okay. This is okay. Sapling. So the Flint was in the west.
And I didn't know how long it was going to take to tell the story. I've never told it before. So thank you guys very much. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm.
This is Jasa Sagonige, a seventh great grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. Listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing, and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault.
of other times, let the wind blow. Let the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper. Let the truth